Surrounding him was a group of vampires, pale and still as trees in the moonlight. Their expressions were cold, stripped down to a bare hostility. He recognized some of them from the Hotel du Mor, the petite Lily and the blonde Jacob, his eyes as narrow as knives, but just as many of them he had never seen before. Raphael stepped forward. His skin was sallow, his eyes ringed with black shadow, but he smiled when he saw Simon. "Daylighter," he breathed. "You came."
"I came," Simon said. "I'm here, so it's done."
"It's far from done, Daylighter." Raphael looked toward Maya.
"Lycanthrope," he said.
"Return to your pack leader and thank him for changing his mind. Tell him that the Night Children will fight beside his people on Brosselin Plain."
Maya's face was tight. "Luke didn't change." Simon interrupted her hastily. "It's fine, Maya. Go."
Her eyes were luminous and sad. "Simon, think," she said. "You don't have to do this."
"Yes, I do." His tone was firm. "Maya, thank you so much for bringing me here. Now go."
"Simon."
He dropped his voice. "If you don't go, they'll kill us both, and all this will have been for nothing. Go, please."
She nodded and turned away, changing as she turned so that one moment she was a slight human girl, her bead-tied braids bouncing on her shoulders, and the next she had hit the ground running on all fours, a swift and silent wolf. She darted from the clearing and vanished into the shadows. Simon turned back to the vampires and almost shouted out loud. Raphael was standing directly in front of him, inches away. Up close, his skin bore the telltale dark traceries of hunger. Simon thought of that night in the Hotel du Mor, faces appearing out of shadow, fleeting laughter, the smell of blood, and shivered. Raphael reached out to Simon and took hold of his shoulders, the grip of his deceptively slight hands like iron.
"Turn your head," he said, "and look at the stars. It will be easier that way."
"So, you are going to kill me," Simon said.
To his surprise, he didn't feel afraid, or even particularly agitated. Everything seemed to have slowed down to a perfect clarity. He was simultaneously aware of every leaf on the branches above him, every tiny pebble on the ground, every pair of eyes that rested on him.
"What did you think?" Raphael said, a little sadly, Simon thought. "It's not personal, I assure you. It's as I said before. You are too dangerous to be allowed to continue as you are. If I had known that you'd become..."
"You'd never let me crawl out of that grave, I know," said Simon.
Raphael met his eyes.
"Everyone does what they must to survive. In that way, even we are just like humans."
His needle teeth slid from their sheaths like delicate razors.
"Hold still," he said. "This will be quick."
He leaned forward.
"Wait," Simon said. And when Raphael drew back with a scowl, he said it again with more force. "Wait, there's something I have to show you."
Raphael made a low hissing sound.
"You had better be doing more than trying to delay me, Daylighter."
"I am. There's something I thought you should see."
Simon reached up and brushed the hair back from his forehead. It felt like a foolish, even theatrical gesture. But as he did it, he saw Clary's desperate white face as she stared up at him, the stele in her hand, and thought, "Well, for her sake at least, I've tried." The effect on Raphael was both startling and instantaneous. He jerked back as if Simon had brandished a crucifix at him, his eyes widening.
"Daylighter," he spat, "who did this to you?"
Simon only stared. He wasn't sure what reaction he'd expected, but it hadn't been this one.
"Clary," Raphael said, answering his own inquiry. "Of course. Only a power like hers would allow this. A vampire. Marked. And with a mark like that one..."
"A mark like what?"
said Jacob, the slender blonde boy standing just behind Raphael. The rest of the vampires were staring as well, with expressions that mingled confusion and a growing fear. Anything that frightened Raphael, Simon thought, was sure to frighten them too.
"This mark," Raphael said, still looking only at Simon. "He's not one of those from the Grey Book. It is an even older mark than that, one of the ancients, drawn by the Maker's own hand.
He made as if to touch Simon's forehead, but didn't seem quite able to bring himself to do it. His hand hovered for a moment, then fell to his side.
Such marks are mentioned, but I've never seen one, and this one.
Simon said, Therefore, whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. You can try to kill me, Raphael, but I wouldn't advise it.
The mark of Cain? Jacob said in disbelief. This mark on you is the mark of Cain?
Kill him, said a red-headed female vampire who stood close to Jacob. She spoke with a heavy accent. Russian, Simon thought, though he wasn't sure.
Kill him anyway.
Raphael's expression was a mix of fury and disbelief.
I will not, he said. Any harm done to him will rebound upon the doer sevenfold. That is the nature of the mark. Of course, if any of you would like to be the one to take that risk, by all means be my guest.
No one spoke or moved.
I thought not, said Raphael.
His eyes raked Simon.
Like the evil queen in the fairy tale, Lucian Greymark has sent me a poisoned apple.
I suppose he hoped I would harm you and reap the punishment that would follow. No, Simon said hastily. No, Luke didn't even know what I'd done. His gesture was made in good faith. You have to honor it.
And so you chose these?
For the first time, there was something other than contempt, Simon thought, in the way Raphael was looking at him.
This is no simple protection spell, Daylighter.
Do you know what Cain's punishment was?
He spoke softly, as if sharing a secret with Simon. And now thou art cursed from the earth. A fugitive and a wanderer shalt thou be.
Then, Simon said, I'll wander, if that's what it comes to. I'll do what I have to.
All this, said Raphael. All this for Nephilim.
Not just for Nephilim, said Simon. I'm doing this for you, too, even if you don't want it. He raised his voice so that the silent vampires surrounding them could hear him. You were worried that if other vampires knew what had happened to me, they'd think Shadowhunter blood could let them walk in the daylight, too. But that's not why I have this power. It was something Valentine did, an experiment. He caused this, not Jace. And it isn't replicable. It won't ever happen again. I imagine he is telling the truth, said Jacob, to Simon's surprise. I've certainly known one or two of the night children who've had a taste of Shadowhunter in the past. None of them developed a fondness for sunlight. It was one thing to refuse to help the Shadowhunters before, said Simon, turning back to Raphael. But now that they've sent me to you, he let the rest of the sentence hang in the air unfinished.
Don't try to blackmail me, Daylighter, said Raphael. Once the Night Children have made a bargain, they honor it, no matter how badly they are dealt with.
He smiled slightly, needle teeth gleaming in the dark.
There is just one thing, he said. One last act I require from you to prove that indeed you acted here in good faith.
The stress he put on the last two words was weighted with cold. What's that? Simon asked.
We will not be the only vampires to fight in Lucian Greymark's battle, Raphael said. So will you.
Jace opened his eyes on a silver whirlpool. His mouth was filled with bitter liquid. He coughed, wondering for a moment if he was drowning. But if so, it was on dry land. He was sitting upright with his back against a stalagmite, and his hands were bound behind him. He coughed again, and salt filled his mouth. He wasn't drowning, he realized, just choking on blood.
Awake, little brother?
Sebastian knelt in front of him, a length of rope in his hands, his grin like an unsheathed knife. Good. I was afraid for a moment that I'd killed you a bit too early. Jace turned his head to the side and spat a mouthful of blood onto the ground. His head felt as if a balloon were being inflated inside it, pressing against the interior of his skull. The silvery whirling above his head slowed and stilled to the bright pattern of stars visible through the hole in the cave roof.
waiting for a special occasion to kill me? Christmas coming?
Sebastian gave Jace a thoughtful look. You have a smart mouth. You didn't learn that from Valentine. What did you learn from him? It doesn't seem to me that he taught you much about fighting, either.
He leaned closer. You know what he gave me for my 9th birthday?
A lesson.
He taught me that there's a place on a man's back where if you sink a blade in, you can pierce his heart and sever his spine all at once.
What did you get for your 9th birthday, little angel boy? A cookie?
9th birthday? Jace swallowed hard. So tell me, what hole was he keeping you in while I was growing up? Because I don't remember seeing you around the manor.
I grew up in this valley. Sebastian jerked his chin toward the cave exit. I don't remember seeing you around either, come to think of it. Although I knew about you.
I bet you didn't know about me.
Jay shook his head.
Valentine wasn't much given to bragging about you. I can't imagine why.
Sebastian's eyes flashed. It was easy to see now the resemblance to Valentine. The same unusual combination of silver-white hair and black eyes. The same fine bones that in another, less strongly molded face would have looked delicate.
I knew all about you, he said.
But you don't know anything, do you?
Sebastian got to his feet. I wanted you alive to watch this, little brother, he said. So watch, and watch carefully.
With a movement so fast it was almost invisible, he drew the sword from its sheath at his waistline. It had a silver hilt, and like the mortal sword, it glowed with a dull dark light. A pattern of stars was etched into the surface of the black blade. It caught the true starlight as Sebastian turned the blade and burned like fire.
Jace held his breath. He wondered if Sebastian merely meant to kill him, but no, Sebastian would have killed him already while he was unconscious, if that were his intention.
Jace watched as Sebastian moved toward the center of the chamber, the sword held lightly in his hand, though it looked to be quite heavy. His mind was whirling. How could Valentine have another son? Who was his mother? Someone else in the circle? Was he older or younger than Jace? Sebastian had reached the huge red-tinged stalagmite in the center of the room. It seemed to pulse as he approached, and the smoke inside it swirled faster. Sebastian half closed his eyes and lifted the blade. He said something, a word in a harsh-sounding demon language, and brought the sword across, hard and fast in a slicing arc. The top of the stalagmite sheared away. Inside, it was hollow as a test tube, filled with a mass of black and red smoke, which swirled upward like gas escaping a punctured balloon. There was a roar, less a sound than a sort of explosive pressure. Jace felt his ears pop. It was suddenly hard to breathe. He wanted to claw at the neck of his shirt, but he couldn't move his hands. They were tied too tightly behind him. Sebastian was half hidden behind the pouring column of red and black. It was coiling, swirling upward. Watch, he cried, his face glowing. His eyes were alight, his white hair whipping on the rising wind, and Jace wondered if his father had looked like that when he was young. Terrible and yet somehow fascinating. Watch and behold Valentine's army. His voice was drowned out then by the sound. It was a sound like the tide crashing up the shore, the breaking of an enormous wave, carrying massive detritus with it, the smashed bones of whole cities, the onrush of a great and evil power. A huge column of twisting, rushing, flapping blackness poured from the smashed stalagmite, funneling up through the air, pouring toward and through the torn gap in the cavern roof. Demons. They rose shrieking, howling and snarling, a boiling mass of claws and talons and teeth and burning eyes. Jace recalled lying on the deck of Valentine's ship as the sky and earth and sea all around turned to nightmare. This was worse. It was as if the earth had torn open and hell had poured through. The demons carried a stench like a thousand rotting corpses. Jace's hands twisted against each other, twisted until the ropes cut into his wrists as they bled. A sour taste rose in his mouth, and he choked helplessly on blood and bile as the last of the demons rose and vanished overhead. a dark flood of horror blotting out the stars. Jace thought he might have passed out for a minute or two. Certainly there was a period of blackness during which the shrieking and howling overhead faded, and he seemed to hang in space, pinned between the earth and the sky, feeling a sense of detachment that was somehow peaceful. It was over too soon. Suddenly he was slammed back into his body, his wrists in agony, his shoulders straining backward, the stench of demon so heavy in the air that he turned his head aside and retched helplessly onto the ground. He heard a dry chuckle and looked up, swallowing hard against the acid in his throat. Sebastian knelt over him, his legs straddling Jace's, his eyes shining. "It's all right, little brother," he said. "They're gone." Jace's eyes were streaming, his throat scraped raw. His voice came out a croak. "He said midnight. Valentine said to open the gate at midnight. It can't be midnight yet." "I always figure it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission in these sorts of situations." Sebastian glanced up at the now empty sky. "It should take them 5 minutes to reach Brosselin Plain from here. Quite a bit less time than it will father to reach the lake. I want to see some Nephilim blood spilled. I want them to writhe and die on the ground. They deserve shame before they get oblivion." "Do you really think that Nephilim have so little chance against demons? It's not as if they're unprepared." Sebastian dismissed him with a flick of his wrist. "I thought you were listening to us. Didn't you understand the plan? Don't you know what my father's going to do?" Jay said nothing. "It was good of you," said Sebastian, "to lead me to Hodge that night. If he hadn't revealed that the mirror we sought was Lake Lynn, I'm not sure this night would have been possible. Because anyone who bears the first two mortal instruments and stands before the mortal glass can summon the angel Raziel out of it, just as Jonathan Shadowhunter did 1,000 years ago. And once you've summoned the angel, you can demand of him one thing, one task, one favor." "A favor?" Jace felt cold all over. "And Valentine is going to demand the feet of the Shadow Hunters at Brosselin?" Sebastian stood up. "That would be a waste," he said. "No. He's going to demand that all Shadow Hunters who have not drunk from the mortal cup, all those who are not his followers, be stripped of their powers. They will no longer be Nephilim. And as such, bearing the marks they do," he smiled, "they will become forsaken. Easy prey for the demons, and those downworlders who have not fled will be quickly eradicated." Jace's ears were ringing with a harsh, tinny sound. He felt dizzy. "Even Valentine," he said. "Even Valentine would never do that." "Please," said Sebastian. "Do you really think my father won't go through with what he's planned?" "Our father," Jace said. Sebastian looked down at him. His hair was a white halo. He looked like the sort of bad angel who might have followed Lucifer out of heaven. "Pardon me," he said with some amusement. "Are you praying?" "No. I said our father. I meant Valentine. Not your father. Ours." For a moment, Sebastian was expressionless. Then his mouth quirked up at the corner and he grinned. "Little angel boy," he said. "You're a fool, aren't you? Just like my father always said." "Why do you keep calling me that?" Jace demanded. "Why are you blathering about angels?" "God," said Sebastian, "you don't know anything, do you? Did my father ever say a word to you that wasn't a lie?" Jace shook his head. He'd been pulling at the ropes binding his wrists, but every time he jerked at them, they seemed to get tighter. He could feel the pounding of his pulse in each of his fingers. "How do you know he wasn't lying to you?" "Because I am his blood. I am just like him. When he's gone, I'll rule the clave after him." "I wouldn't brag about being just like him if I were you." "There's that, too." Sebastian's voice was emotionless. "I don't pretend to be anything other than I am. I don't behave as if I'm horrified that my father does what he needs to do to save his people, even if they don't want or, if you ask me, deserve saving. Who would you rather have for a son, A boy who's proud that you're his father, or one who cowers from you in shame and fear?
I'm not afraid of Valentine, said Jace.
You shouldn't be, said Sebastian.
You should be afraid of me.
There was something in his voice that made Jace abandon his struggle against the bindings and look up. Sebastian was still holding his blackly gleaming sword. It was a dark, beautiful thing, Jace thought, even when Sebastian lowered the point of it so that it rested above Jace's collarbone, just nicking his Adam's apple. Jace struggled to keep his voice steady.
So now what? You're going to kill me while I'm tied up? Does the thought of fighting me scare you that much?
Nothing. Not a flicker of emotion passed across Sebastian's pale face.
You, he said, are not a threat to me. You're a pest, an annoyance. Then why won't you untie my hands?
Sebastian, utterly still, stared at him. He looked like a statue, Jace thought, like the statue of some long-dead prince, someone who'd died young and spoiled. And that was the difference between Sebastian and Valentine. Though they shared the same cold marble looks, Sebastian had an air about him of something ruined, something eaten away from the inside.
I'm not a fool, Sebastian said,
and you can't bait me.
I left you alive only long enough so that you could see the demons. When you die now, and return to your angel ancestors, you can tell them there is no place for them in this world anymore. They've failed the Clave, and the Clave no longer needs them. We have Valentine now. You're killing me because you want me to give a message to God for you?
Jay shook his head, the point of the blade scraping across his throat.
You're crazier than I thought.
Sebastian just smiled and pushed the blade in slightly deeper. When Jay swallowed, he could feel the point of it denting his windpipe.
If you have any real prayers, little brother, say them now.
I don't have any prayers, said Jace. I have a message, though, for our father. Will you give it to him?
Of course, Sebastian said smoothly.
But there was something in the way he said it, a flicker of hesitation before he spoke, that confirmed what Jace was already thinking.
You're lying, he said. You won't give him the message because you're not going to tell him what you've done. He never asked you to kill me, and he won't be happy when he finds out. Nonsense. You're nothing to him. You think he'll never know what happened to me if you kill me now, here. You can tell him I died in the battle, or he'll just assume that's what happened. But you're wrong if you think he won't know. Valentine always knows.
You don't know what you're talking about, Sebastian said, but his face had tightened.
Jace kept talking, pressing home his advantage.
You can't hide what you're doing, though. There's a witness.
A witness?
Sebastian looked almost surprised, which Jace counted as something as a victory.
What are you talking about?
The Raven, Jace said.
He's been watching from the shadows. He'll tell Valentine everything.
Hugin?
Sebastian's gaze snapped up. And though the Raven was nowhere to be seen, Sebastian's face, when he glanced back down at Jace, was full of doubt.
If Valentine knows you murdered me while I was tied up and helpless, he'll be disgusted with you, Jace said.
And he heard his own voice drop into his father's cadences, the way Valentine spoke when he wanted something, soft and persuasive.
He'll call you a coward. He'll never forgive you.
Sebastian said nothing. He was staring down at Jace, his lips twitching and hatred boiled behind his eyes like poison.
Untie me, Jace said softly. Untie me and fight me. It's the only way.
Sebastian's lip twitched again, hard, and this time Jace thought he had gone too far. Sebastian drew the sword back and raised it, and the moonlight burst off it in a thousand silver shards, silver as the stars, silver as the color of his hair. He bared his teeth, and the sword's whistling breath cut the night air with a scream as he brought it down in a whirling arc. Clary sat on the steps of the dais in the Hall of Accords, holding the stele in her hands. She had never felt quite so alone. The hall was utterly, totally empty. Clary had looked everywhere for Isabel once the fighters had all passed through the portal, but she hadn't been able to find her. Aline had told her that Isabel was probably back at the Penhallows house, where Aline and a few other teenagers were meant to be looking after at least a dozen children under fighting age. She tried to get Clary to go there with her, but Clary had declined. If she couldn't find Isabel, she'd rather be alone than with near strangers. Or so she'd thought. But sitting here, she found the silence and the emptiness becoming more and more oppressive. Still, she hadn't moved. She was trying as hard as she could not to think of Jace, not to think of Simon, not to think of her mother or Luke or Alec. And the only way not to think, she had found, was to remain motionless and to stare at a single square of marble on the floor instead, counting the cracks in it over and over. There were six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. She finished the count and started again from the beginning. 1. The sky overhead exploded. Or at least that was what it sounded like. Clary threw her head back and stared upward through the clear roof of the hall. The sky had been dark a moment ago. Now it was a roiling mass of flame and blackness, shot through with an ugly orange light. Things moved against that light. Hideous things she didn't want to see. Things that made her grateful to the darkness for obscuring her view. The occasional glimpse was bad enough. The transparent skylight overhead rippled and bent as the demon host passed, as if it were being warped by tremendous heat. At last there was a sound like a gunshot, and a huge crack appeared in the glass, spider webbing out into countless fissures. Clary ducked, covering her head with her hands as glass rained down around her like tears. They were almost to the battlefield when the sound came, ripping the night in half. One moment the woods were as silent as they were dark. The next moment the sky was lit with a hellish orange glow. Simon staggered and nearly fell. He caught at a tree trunk to steady himself and looked up, barely able to believe what he was seeing. All around him the other vampires were staring up at the sky, their white faces like night-blooming flowers, lifting to catch the moonlight as nightmare after nightmare streaked across the sky.
"You keep passing out on me," Sebastian said. "It's extremely tedious."
Jace opened his eyes. Pain lanced through his head. He put his hand up to touch the side of his face and realized his hands were no longer tied behind him. A length of rope trailed from his wrist. His hand came away from his face black.
Blood. Dark in the moonlight.
He stared around him. They were no longer in the cavern. He was lying on soft dirt and grass on the valley floor, not far from the stone house. He could hear the sound of the water in the creek, clearly close by. Knotted tree branches overhead blocked some of the moonlight, but it was still fairly bright.
"Get up," Sebastian said. "You have 5 seconds before I kill you where you are."
Jace stood as slowly as he thought he could get away with. He was still a little dizzy. Fighting for balance, he dug the heels of his boots into the soft dirt, trying to give himself some stability.
"Why did you bring me out here?"
"Two reasons," Sebastian said. "One, I enjoyed knocking you out. Two, it would be bad for either of us to get blood on the floor of that cavern, trust me. And I intend to spill plenty of your blood." Jace felt at his belt and his heart sank. Either he'd dropped most of his weapons while Sebastian was dragging him through the tunnels, or, more likely, Sebastian had thrown them away. All he had left was a dagger. It was a short blade, too short, no match for the sword.
"Not much of a weapon, that." Sebastian grinned, white in the moon-dazzled darkness.
"I can't fight with this," Jace said, trying to sound as quavering and nervous as he could.
"What a shame."
Sebastian came closer to Jace, grinning. He was holding his sword loosely, theatrically unconcerned, the tips of his fingers beating a light rhythm on the hilt. If there was ever going to be an opening for him, Jace thought this was probably it. He swung his arm back and punched Sebastian as hard as he could in the face. Bone crunched under his knuckles. The blow sent Sebastian sprawling. He skidded backward in the dirt, the sword flying from his grip. Jace caught it up as he darted forward, and a second later was standing over Sebastian, blade in hand. Sebastian's nose was bleeding, the blood a scarlet streak across his face. He reached up and pulled his collar aside, baring his pale throat.
"So go ahead," he said.